Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, the future state of liberty, Spokane Valley. Brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news. Once again, it's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about being an American again. I'm going to talk about that here in a second. But we always start with the foundation. Our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Ephesians 2, 5 through 6 says, God made us alive together with Christ and raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. Are we acting like that? I don't know. I don't think so in some cases, and it really is a call for us as Christians to decide to buck up and buck up as Americans, and that's what I want to talk about briefly today before I get to the intelligence brief. We have in America today a group of young people who have been indoctrinated into socialism, and who have no concept of history, they have no concept of principle, they have no concept of the world before about 100 years ago, if they have that at all. They think that socialism is the fair, the compassionate thing to do, even though socialism always leads to suffering and misery. Just ask the people in Venezuela. My wife once said that socialism makes everyone equally poor, equally destitute. And the folks that fled the former Soviet Union understand the perils of socialism. The younger generation, some of them have no clue of the history of the Greeks, the Romans, why we have representative government, where that came from in the Bible. They have a sense that they just don't care. Live and let live. But if you're making too much money, we want some of that to be redistributed. And they don't understand that you can't incentivize hard work by taking it, the fruits of that hard work, taking it away from people. And they don't understand that ultimately their policies lead to war. And I want to be very clear about this because it is very evident in the news media right now. This anti-gun push is a push for a civil war. I want to say that very plainly to everybody out there in Patriot Radio land. The people that continue to push this aren't pushing for gun control. They're pushing for civil war. That's what they're doing. Because there is a group of Americans who fought, bled, died for this country. There's a group of patriots in this country that still believe the values that made this country great: life, liberty, the pursuit of property, pursuit of happiness. And they're not going to give that up. They're not just going to say, okay, you can go ahead and have that. And these folks that are on the media nowadays, and I'm talking about these younger folks that have been indoctrinated, don't even realize they're being used. How do they think this is going to play out? Because you tell me you're going to ban my so-called assault weapon, or you're going to ban my semi-automatic rifle. And you can't even describe to me the difference between what a semi-automatic rifle is and an automatic rifle. And you're going to say, no, you can't possess that anymore. And you're going to tell me that. And I'm going to say, I will not comply. You do not determine my rights. God does. You will not take that right away from me. I'm not going to let you. That's what patriotic Americans are going to do all over this country. In fact, some are already doing this. So then the next step is, okay, we have to enforce this. And I'm going to get to some of the things that are in the news that are just absolutely startling, because 10 years ago, when I brought this issue up, that this was the trajectory which we were headed, especially under the Obama administration, people said, it's not going to happen, not in America. It's never going to be that way. And this is, you know, I hear this from people who don't have a lot of life experience. They have not been outside the United States to see the way the rest of the world operates. And I am not talking about Western Europe. I'm talking about third world countries. I'm talking about the vast majority of the rest of the world and how it actually works and the gem of freedom that we have here in America. And that gem of freedom is founded on two very basic things, actually three. First, life, all life, has value, including life in the womb. Two, if life has value, then it is worth defending, not just from criminals, but from tyrants. That is the Second Amendment. And then also, you have the right of property. The idea that you can produce enough to fight against tyranny, to pass on to your posterity, and also that having that property allows you the ability to have the freedom of conscience. Now, I know that's a deep thing, and think about it. Read some of what the founders said. But we have a group of people who don't understand that in America today, and we have another older generation who are intentionally trying to destroy the America that I grew up in, that you grew up in. They do not want a constitutional republic any longer. They want a socialist technocracy. And if we don't understand that, and if people are going to argue about that, and there might be some people listening right now that you're going to argue with me on that, go read, go research, because that is where we are at. And ultimately, it will come down to this. When I say I am not going to comply, they then will try to use the force of the state to come take what they want to take. And at that point, you are beyond the political realm. And for those of us that have seen other countries where people or a segment of people have been disarmed, and they've tried to implement socialism, it ends in suffering and bloodshed, and it always has. That is the lesson of history. That when you have governmental power, the state taking the place of God, that that's what ends up happening in one form or another. And it's important, I think, that we don't sugarcoat this, but that we hit this head on. And as Christians, and I got to tell you something. For those Christians out there that say, I'm not going to vote, my vote doesn't count. Listen, that is the problem, because you not showing up has allowed for this degradation to occur. If we show up, we will win. If we show up, we will win. And the question I have for everybody out there right now, what we're seeing in America right now is has brought us to a decision point. Are we going to stand up and stop this, or are we going to let it happen? And then the question is, what are you going to do about it? Which brings us now to your international front as part of your daily intelligence briefing from the Middle East. The Turks continuing to be aggressive in Syria. Rumors abounding that the Iran deal is going to be abrogated. 23 members of the reconstituted Sanhedrin drafting a letter saying that it is now time for the third temple to be built And interestingly, saying that they need the help of Muslims to do this. Very interesting. So you have this tinderbox in the Middle East, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this with our guest later today. But also you have this tension now, not just in Syria with the Russians, but across the world. This poisoning incident that occurred in England. And now what some are saying is the largest expulsion of intelligence officers in history. Europe and the United States kicking Russian intelligence officers out. Closing the consulate, the Russian consulate in Seattle, Trump did. And now the Russians saying they're going to retaliate against the United States. Things are very tense out there right now. Also, the Chinese ramping up their space warfare program. Now, for those of you that don't understand space warfare has all kinds of different aspects to it. But one of the main aspects is the use of satellites as weapons and the use of satellites to take out other satellites. And the Chinese are perfecting this. They're also weaponizing capital. In other words, they're weaponizing money. They're buying up assets in other countries. And there is an Asian mindset of warfare that is kind of a little bit different than the Western mindset. The Western mindset, we will take our supply lines behind us, behind our armies. The Asian mindset, they will actually fight to their supply line. They will fight to supplies. So they'll identify something ahead of them, they'll fight to supplies. So when you see the Chinese buying up farms and other things in other countries, you have to understand it in the context of these different military mindsets. Also, the Chinese weaponizing big data. They are collecting big data to then turn that around and weaponize it. What does weaponize it mean? It means you can get enough data on people to build a profile and then introduce something that can be according to that person's profile, changing their behavior. In addition to that, we have this trade war looming. Now, a lot of people saying, well, this is just a threat by Trump and this is just an opening salvo of negotiation. And that's what our Treasury Secretary has said as well, or at least implied, I should say. But we are in a very tense point in history because trade wars, data wars, electronic wars, banking currency wars precede shooting wars. And things are very tense right now. And I want to have our guest flesh this out for us today. We'll have him on here in a little bit. But this brings up Jim Rickards on the national front talking about the fact that the IMF is going to be launching a digital crypto world currency based on the strategic drawing rights. That's the basket of currencies, Basel, Switzerland, and the Bank of International Settlements. That they're going to launch this digital cryptocurrency. Well, what that has is implications is that the United States dollar then no longer is needed to settle accounts worldwide. That will have a massive impact on the U.S. economy. Jim Rickards is predicting this. Now, Jim Rickards is very well-respected and well-known and used to do this type of analysis for the Central Intelligence Agency. But I think his warning brings up some interesting points that we need to be prepared for. What if this does happen? The world doesn't need the petrodollar anymore. How is that going to affect us? Also on the national front, the head of the Forest Service resigned amidst an investigation into misconduct. We've talked about the BLM, talked about the Forest Service, the massive allegations of misconduct, especially in the BLM and also somewhat in the DOJ, very concerning that the deep state really does hang on to the bitter end. And that it seems like the only way to do this is to fire the lot of them, get them out of there, identify who they are and get them out. And to a certain extent, the Trump administration has been doing that, to his credit. But for those of us who are ranchers and farmers and loggers and good patriots here in the Western United States, I mean, this has taken 30 years. And people talk about political or term limits for politicians, political term limits. I say that we need to start talking about bureaucratic term limits, and that the bureaucracy is truly the great problem in America today, and shrinking the size of that bureaucracy and not allowing it to be generational in its agenda against the Constitution and against basic principles of freedom is the way that we're going to turn this around. Also on the national front, McMaster's out, Bolton in, new head for the CIA. We're going to talk about that with our guests as well. But I think that the foreign policy, Bolton is a very tough man. And I think the hard line that he is going to take in the foreign policy arena is why he was brought in. And so we'll get a little bit more from our guests, but I think that's, you know, just kind of reading into what Trump did, I think that's what it is. Now, there's a lot of concern about him and some of his associations, but it at least gives us a glimpse at the direction of foreign policy for the United States. Also, on the regional front, mainstream media didn't talk a lot about this. This ISIS-inspired teen who brought a bomb to school in Utah. No outcry really about that I heard. Banning bombs obviously didn't stop that from happening. So you have a narrative on guns that's being played out that really doesn't jive with the realities of some of the things that we're facing. Also on the regional front, I want to talk about the Bundy case and this new... So there was a motion for reconsideration based on this dismissal with prejudice that happened with Judge Navarro here back in January. So now there is a new Special Agent Larry Wooten email that we're trying to get a hold of it. Apparently there's been a temporary protective order. So that email cannot be released, but the email... is even more specific about allegations, apparently, internal to the Bureau of Land Management. So we want to see what's happening there, but this investigation by Congress and also internal by the Trump administration, I hope that they're watching this and they take this into consideration. And it's my understanding that Larry Wooten actually sent that email not just to the court, but also to the Trump administration and to Attorney General Sessions. So we're going to get all that confirmed, but a lot more in that case. That case is not over. Also on the regional front, 51st state, wow, booming. It is exploding. Now, there is a small faction in Northeast Washington, a very small faction, that has ties to socialist organizations, to the Southern Poverty Law Center, and to what can only really be termed as militant atheists. And these folks are kind of trying to band together and say that they don't want a 51st state, and they're making some absolutely outrageous claims. But despite that, and in fact, probably because of it, they are driving people toward this movement because people see what's happening in Seattle, how bad the session went by this agenda out of downtown Seattle and where the state is headed. And they want to fight. They don't want to be a part of that anymore. So when you see this kind of outrageous stuff going on, know that, you know, there are connections to socialist organizations, and there are screenshots of all this, and socialist people that are part of socialist organizations or associated with them. And also the Southern Poverty Law Center. So you know where all of this stuff is being ginned up and coming from. Why would the Southern Poverty Law Center not want a free part of America? Well, I think the answer is self-evident. Why would downtown Seattle socialists not want a free part of America? I think the answer is self-evident, because they must control. And we are for freedom, and we are for liberty. And that is why so many people are flocking to the 51st State Movement. And thank you, everybody that's been supporting. It's been just, it's super hard to keep up, but it's just been overwhelming in a very positive way. Also on the regional front, just a note out of Idaho, I talked to Representative Heather Scott, and she talked about it being one of the best sessions they've had in a decade down there, reducing taxes, expanding freedom, shrinking regulation. It's been an incredible session. I want to have her on here soon to tell everybody how it went down in Boise. So a positive in Idaho in very stark contrast to what happened in Washington State. Apparently they passed an NDAA, indefinite detention bill that says that you can't enforce that indefinite detention provision of the NDAA in Idaho, and some other just amazing freedom pieces of legislation. And obviously they're allowing for the right to bear arms, which brings us to the last thing on the regional front. Now, this is kind of national, kind of regional, but I want to go through a couple things. So people said 10 years ago, this is not true. They are never going to talk about confiscating firearms. That's just a ruse. It's hyperbole. It'll never happen in America. And yet, now, just yesterday, we'll start with the first. Former Justice of the United States Supreme Court, John Paul Stevens, called publicly for a repeal of the Second Amendment. So people that said that would never happen, okay, you have now a former justice of the United States Supreme Court who's calling for a repeal of the Second Amendment. But not to be outdone, a Georgia state lawmaker, Tucker Carlson, her name is Erica Thomas, said that we aren't about confiscating guns. We want to, quote, seize them, end quote. Okay, so that's a Georgia state lawmaker. But not to be outdone, a candidate for sheriff in North Carolina said the following, quote, you've heard people say you have to pry my gun from my cold dead hands, end quote, and then quote again, okay, end quote, implying that he would advocate the killing of gun owners who don't want to give up their guns. Folks, three specific examples in America. Now, in Washington State, they're still next year going to be pushing for a so-called assault weapons ban and a magazine registry. This is happening in the United States today. It's here, everybody. And if you value your freedom, you better get involved and get out there in November, because these people are serious, and they're so confident they're talking publicly about things 10 years ago, again, were considered hyperbole, and that would never happen in the United States. And yet you have three separate people. Same lines. We want to seize your firearms. And if you don't comply, we're going to use the force of the state to take them. Folks, that is a frightening, frightening change in American politics, that it is that widespread, that it is that bold, that it is that out in the open. And this is the result, okay? If we don't show up, this is what they will do. This is their stated intent. This is their stated agenda. And if we don't show up, this is what they're going to do. All right, on the local front, Red Pill Expo coming up here in Spokane, Washington, June 21st through 23rd. A lot of great speakers. Check it out online, Red Pill Expo. Just great to see it here in Spokane. If you can't attend, they also have a live streaming purchase that you can do and sit in the comfort of your own home and watch the Red Pill Expo. And again, a lot of great speakers. Also on the local front, coming up on this Saturday, the 31st of March, going to be doing another 51st State presentation at Sadie Halstead Middle School in Newport, Washington at 10 a.m. Again, Newport, Washington, 10 a.m. this coming Saturday. And talking about the 51st State and how we can move forward with that. I think we have well over 50 flags that are already out and flying. And if you have a flag up, take a picture of it, send it in so we can post it up on the Facebook page. But just tremendous amount of support for this movement. And just thank you, everybody out there, for being involved. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you once again for praying for me and Victoria and the show. And if you get a chance, go to Facebook.com/PatriotRadioUS. Like the page. Share it with your friends and your family. You can also check us out as a podcast on Podbean at Matt Shea and also on iTunes. And remember, this is a listener-supported show. You can always go to VoteShea.com. And help keep us on the air and help keep freedom and liberty on the airwaves. Well, it is my pleasure to introduce my guest today, Major General Paul Vallely, retired, but also a military and foreign policy analyst, chairman of Stand Up America, and one of our great guests that we have on here as regularly as we can get him. General Vallely, thanks once again for being on the show.
Well, thank you, Matt. Thank you for the invitation.
So a lot of things happening in the foreign policy arena. First, I want to get your thoughts on John Bolton and kind of what direction you think he's going to head as far as foreign policy is concerned.
Well, I know John very well. I anticipated back in 2016 and after the election that President Trump would, in fact, put him in as national security advisor immediately. But the White House went in a different direction and appointed General McMaster. But it's a great fit. He understands the international situation, world affairs. He certainly understands the pros and cons of the United Nations. And he is an excellent pick because when John puts his foot into the White House here shortly, he will hit the ground running because he understands the Middle East. He understands Korea. He understands the Europeans, great wealth of knowledge and wisdom. So I'm very happy about that appointment.
So how do you think he's going to be dealing with the Chinese, particularly and the Russians?
Well, he will do what President Trump guides him to do. And, you know, they throw around terms as hardliners and right wing and all of this. These terms don't mean anything anymore, especially to me. You have to examine what I call the reality prism of what's going on. In the case of threats to the United States, you have to examine those, and then you have to come up with a strategy how you're going to counter or neutralize those particular threats, whether it's the Middle East, Iran, or whether it may be Russia or North Korea or ISIS or Al-Qaeda. And so that's how you go through that national security analysis process. And he has a great staff there, and he's got the support of General Mattis in the Pentagon. So we'll see what transpires here and what the priorities will be.
Well, we also have this new head of the Central Intelligence Agency. What is your take and your thoughts on that?
You know, I don't know that much about the woman that's being promoted to replace Pompeo, of course, who went to West Point, my old alma mater. He was first in his class. Of course, he went to the State Department. But anyhow, there's a lot of barbs being thrown at her because she was involved in advanced interrogation methods and in her position. So a lot of the left-wing progressive senators will, of course, attack her on being, in support of torture, which she was not. And they use advanced interrogation techniques. I'm a big believer in waterboarding because it's not what people think it is, and it's not torture. It certainly puts fear into the person you're interrogating. He wakes up in the morning, there's no wounds, there's no blood, there's just the idea that you got information you needed for the most part from that type of advanced interrogation method. So we'll see what happens.
So, you know, there's some people out there that say that, well, it actually, you don't get a lot of good information by those types of techniques. How do you respond to that?
Not true. You do. You get great response. I would say 8 out of 10 individuals who are evil threats to the United States that we've interrogated over the years, and some of the methods we used previously that we did in Vietnam, for example, that, in fact, it's a great way of extracting information. And the vast majority of the people interrogated will cough up information.
So shifting gears a little bit, there's been quite a few articles out there in regards to China really pushing, you know, kind of a space arms race, China allegedly weaponizing big data, China allegedly weaponizing capital. Where do you think the Chinese are headed, and how do you think that we can head off some of those stated goals of China to expand their spheres of influence, particularly in Asia, but also in traditional U.S. spheres of influence?
Well, China has made great advancements over the last 5 years, especially in developing their new fighters, their missiles, their rockets, their armored vehicles, their weapons. Of course, they've taken a lot. We know have stolen a lot of our technologies and advanced weapon systems and are using them. And so Russia has done the same thing in the last 5 years, whereas we went back on a retrograde backward movement during the Obama days. And, of course, that's why President Trump and General Mattis now are working on revitalizing and rebuilding our armed forces, because we've got severely behind. But China, much like Japan in World War II, is expanding its sphere of influence throughout the South China Sea. China is also working very closely now, a lot of people don't know, with Pakistan on the Silk Road, and also which will go all the way to Afghanistan up into Turkey. And so they're advancing this new Silk Road agreement, building the road, and so they'll have the influence of that. Also, they're building the first port on the Indian Ocean in Pakistan. It'll go from China through Pakistan, and China then will have a water port in the Indian Ocean. And so this is how they're influencing and expanding that sphere of influence around the world, not only in the South China Sea, but also through the Middle East and up.
So with that, and with some of the things that China is doing, especially with the weaponization of capital and the weaponization of big data, how can we protect United States interests? Because it seems like they're a little bit more advanced, or at least publicly more advanced than we are. Or is that really an overstatement of their capabilities?
No, that's an overstatement. They're advancing because they've taken our technologies. We've trained so many Chinese engineers in this country in our universities that have gone back to China. And, of course, they do reverse technology on a lot of weapon systems and other type of, computer heavily driven and databasing, data mining. And so they're on the top of their game, but we're still better. We still have the technology in our country with our young people coming out of the mass development of social media, cyber security, and they're not up with us yet. That's why they continue to take our technology. But President Trump has clamped down on that very severely now. So you're going to see a whole change now with the situation with China and the tariffs that we're not going to take it anymore. We're not going to have severe trade imbalances anymore. And that's what the president promised to do, and that's what he's doing.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. There's been great, I'll use the word fear-mongering out there about a trade war, but it sounds like Trump is trying to negotiate something. Could you give the listeners a little bit of insight on that?
Well, the trade war is just a lot of hype. There's no war going on. What the president is doing is renegotiating deals, particularly with trade, where there's imbalances, particularly in certain countries in Europe, in Mexico, and Canada on a lot of agricultural products. We see, you know, the difference in a lot of these developments, you know, even with Apple Computer, American products being able to be fairly sold in China with a large tariff put on them, where we allow the cheaper cars coming in from Japan and Europe even, and we don't do anything about it, but yet they'll charge maybe up to 25-30% tariff on American products coming into their country. And see, President Trump understands that. That's why it's important. The president is well understood by the American people that he's negotiating deals, and he's negotiating fair, balanced trade between us and other countries. And so that's why they want to hype it as a war, but it's not a war.
Let's talk a little bit, too, about this mysterious visit. Nobody really knows if it's true or not, but this armored train coming into Beijing and ostensibly a visit by Kim Jong-un to Beijing. I mean, have you heard anything about that, and what are the implications of that?
I saw it on the news this morning, Matt, so I don't know much more about it than you do, but I would say it's probably true from the looks of it.
Yeah, very, very curious.
They're neighbors. They come under the influence of China, and so I'm sure because of Trump, if that is true that he's there, they're negotiating some items, and so we're having a great influence now on that relationship, I think.
Well, do you think that the North Koreans really do listen to China, or do you take the media line that they kind of are just these independent actors that don't listen to anybody?
Well, sure they do, because China, as you know or may remember historically, bailed out the North Koreans in the Korean War in the early 50s and have been a big supporter of providing supplies in terms of food, materiel for their industries in North Korea. And so it's sort of being able to draw these technologies from China into North Korea, because nobody else other than a few countries have been dealing with North Korea over the last few decades because of the sanctions that were put on them.
So, you know, with all of these things that are happening in the Middle East and happening in Asia, how do you think Trump is doing, and what has stood out to you as some of his real big successes?
Well, as he said in the beginning, first, the big success is rebuilding our military. Second is rebuilding our intelligence capability and wiping out the deep state, which is infiltrated into our CIA and into the State Department and have really neutered our human intelligence capability. So that's a very big plus. Also, with the meetings he's had with countries such as Saudi Arabia, now there's a new alliance between Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Israel, and the United States to counter the Iran threats. So this whole realignment going on in the world is because of the initiatives of President Trump. But I just wish we had quit blaming Russia for everything. And what we suggest is that Putin and Trump could work out a lot of things if they sit down together. They really can. But all of this collusion stuff and all this myth going on has precluded a good warm relationship in the first year between Putin and Trump.
Well, what about the situation with the closing down of the consulate in Seattle and the kicking out of intelligence officers? I mean, do you think that's something that's a blip on the radar? How'd you characterize it?
Yeah, it's just maneuvering. And, of course, they kick out Russian delegation or members of it in Great Britain. And then what do you think Putin's going to do? He's going to retaliate and do the same thing. It's their chess moves. That's what they are. And when we in the United States do the same thing, he closed down St. Petersburg, and he closed down basically when the United States closed down the Seattle office consulate over there. Then, of course, yesterday, they announced they're closing, Putin is, the St. Petersburg consulate for the United States.
So it'll be a little bit of... Well, you know, the tit-for-tat is going to only go for so long, and ultimately it will end up in some sort of a meeting between Trump and Putin, I would think.
I would think so. That's so what I'm advising anyhow. I don't know whether you knew it, but I set up the first meeting between Trump and Putin last year when I was invited to Moscow to speak, and I met with the foreign ministry, and they agreed. I recommended they meet in Reykjavik like Reagan and Gorbachev did, but they ended up, the foreign ministry when I was there said, well, why don't we do it at the G20 meeting? And I said, okay, that's what we should do. So I came back, reported it, and Trump and Putin met in June at the G20 meeting. So things can be developed if they're handled right.
I completely agree, and I think that some of those things may be overstated right now, but they need an opportunity to talk as two leaders of two world powers and have that honest conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'd like to get your take on Syria, Iran, Turkey, the Middle East. You know, the Turks, invading the northern part of Syria. What are the implications of that? How do you think that whole thing is going to shape up there in the Middle East? Because it seems like the Turkish government is not really on anybody's side, but on Turkey's side.
Well, Erdogan, the president of Turkey, obviously is trying to move Turkey to a more pro-Islamic state rather than a secular state. That's been going on for several years now. Erdogan's also sparring with the European Union and NATO. He's had his bouts with Putin and Russia when they shot down that Russian plane. Turkey's primary interest in northern Iraq and northern Syria is Kurdistan, and they're trying to eliminate the Kurds. And the Kurds, on the other hand, are trying to establish an independent state, particularly in Iraq. So you've got Russian forces supporting Assad in Damascus. You have Iran now trying to move its forces across the southern part of Syria into Lebanon and support their proxy, which is Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. And, of course, you've got Jordan there sort of caught in the middle. But the big threat that I was speaking about with Prince Salman and President Trump, United Arab Emirates, and Bibi Netanyahu in Israel now forming a very strong alliance to counter two things in Iran: their influence into Lebanon and across Syria, as well as the development and continued development of their nuclear program.
So do you think that the Turks are going to continue to push into Syria, and do you think that ultimately
that can be
a flashpoint? Or
no, they're already inside Syria.
Well, do you think they're going to push further in? Because
I don't think so. I think their only interest is protecting that corridor coming from Turkey down through the Euphrates River there. There's a pathway that goes down that the Kurds are on both sides of it. And the Kurds were trying to close that off to any Turkish influence. So Turkey's a very strong, viable armed forces, and their goal is to do away with the Kurds and not allow them to have an independent state. And that's going to go on for quite a while.
The United States has, in a lot of different cases, supported the Kurds. How do you think that is going to end up? Because, nobody seems to want an independent Kurdistan.
Well, the Kurds do.
Well, yeah, obviously.
And everybody else seems to be against them, so it's hard to tell how that sizes up. We have our special op forces in the area. We have them, of course, in Iraq and other type forces. We still have forces in Syria right now, northern Syria, near Afrin. I don't know how it's going to work out. That's why Putin and Trump need to meet and really get a lot of things settled over there.
Well, let's shift gears back to the United States. There has been media article after media article after media article in regards to the deep state war against Trump.
Right.
Is it true that there are elements inside the United States government that are actively working to subvert Trump, number one? Number two, do they actually want to see him removed from office? And what do you think the likelihoods of this agenda are in succeeding?
Well, the first two, the answer is yes. There's the deep state. It is a politicized deep state within the government that was there, supported by Obama, nurtured by Obama and the Clinton criminal organization that they run. And so, yes, very active. And you saw McCabe coming out as one of those actors in the deep state. We used to call the gigantic bureaucracy in Washington. Well, what happened over the years, that bureaucracy became four levels in the swamp there of political activists and the different departments. And that was fostered by the Clintons first and then by Obama, to the degree that all of those upper echelons were infiltrated by pro-Obama, left-wing, progressive people. And now the goal is we've got to wipe out that deep state and return an honest government to the American people. And it's being done each and every day. But, boy, it's a tough one. It's going to take a while.
You know, I've been asked a lot of by a lot of people whether some of these folks are ever going to be held accountable or they'll just be fired and removed. What's your take on that?
Great question, Nia. That's a great question. I cannot understand why Jeff Sessions, Department of Justice, has not placed some of these people before a grand jury, indictments, and some of these people already have committed felony offenses, lied to the FBI, lied to the American people, and it's the elite being able to cover themselves. And the first thing I would like to see are people taken in handcuffs and locked up. And that's what needs to be done, including Hillary Clinton and all of her corrupt people that have worked for her, and also President Obama, same thing.
So one kind of enigmatic figure, if I can use that word, is General Mattis, and I have heard nothing. This is from just kind of line troops that are, you know, family members, friends, that he is doing just a heck of a great job. What is your take on him? And also, what changes have been made specifically in rules of engagement in some of the theaters we're operating in overseas? Because I know that was a big deal to me when I was over there, and it's always a big deal to those that are on the front line.
Well, when some of us were advising Trump before the election, we brought up many of those things. We had a meeting in Washington with 200 general officers, admirals, and colonels, and members of the intelligence community. And at that meeting we had outside of Dulles Airport, that we gave him a lot of advice of what had to be done. And appointing a new Secretary of Defense and making sure he had the generals and admirals that would carry out the revitalization, the rebuild, and getting rid of these terrible rules of engagement we've had, and placing the authority back with the local commanders. And that's what we were pushing. If you have a general over there, you've got to give him the authority to fight the war as he sees it, not as how Washington sees it. And that's what President Trump has done. He's decentralized. He's gone and let the commanders, of course, they brief them, and let them carry out their mission.
So I'm really happy to hear that. I know that the military being rebuilt in the right way I know it's been a great morale booster for those in the armed services. As far as the future holds, technology specifically, how do you think the United States can address not just threats from hacking, but other technological threats here to our homeland? You know, we've had these reports about the grid being hacked to the point they could turn the lights on and off and all of these other things. How much of that is real or versus hyperbole? And what can we do here to strengthen the grid here in the homeland?
Well, first of all, our big threat is an electromagnetic pulse, a low-yield nuclear or a low-level nuclear explosion that can be delivered by a merchant ship or by a launch, from those merchant ships or from a North Korea into a launch satellite that could then be targeted on specifically New York City. And with that electromagnetic pulse, basically it deadens anything that's got a chip in it. So the computers go down, cars won't run, airplanes will fall out of the sky, and basically it burns our grid system, so we lose electricity. And so that is a very, very big threat right now. So they're hardening facilities with lead, but we're way behind in doing that. We're very vulnerable to that kind of attack. Continued technology developments of being able to get in and control our computers, the National Security Agency, and working with corporations and private sector organizations are building us a very strong culture now that can probably forego and prevent a lot of the attacks against us from a security standpoint.
If you could, for the listeners, talk a little bit about Stand Up America and how they can reach you on the internet and see what you're up to.
Well, thanks, Matt. Yeah, we have been running the Stand Up America U.S. Foundation for about 10 years now. We do TV, radio. We do events almost all focused on national security. We've also supported Intel Op teams going into Europe and into the Middle East, which I've been on a few. We have our website, which is standupamericaus.org. I would ask people to join and support us, donate, help us out in our projects. We also have the Soldiers Memorial Fund Foundation that we run out of Montana, which basically helps our veterans and our active duty soldiers and families. So that's soldiersmemorialfund.org. So any support they give us, they'll get our newsletter, which we put out every weekend, as well as go to our website again that we have for the Soldiers Fund and also for Stand Up America.
Well, General Valley, thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio here. Really appreciate everything you're doing. And if there's anything I can do to be of help to you, always hope that you send me an email or just stay in touch. And again, your insight is just invaluable, and thank you, because I think a lot of Americans need to hear more of this and quit listening to the mainstream media.
Good idea. I'm not a know-it-all, but I'm involved in a lot of things, so I get a lot of current intel information that I can pass on. So thank you, Matt, for having me. A real pleasure.
All right. God bless and take care. As General Paul Vallely, Stand Up America U.S., you can find him on the internet. They've been doing this for a long time. It's a great organization to keep track of if you're following any news feeds. He has been right in the thick of it, especially in the Middle East and Syria. You know, as you heard, being the guy that helped to coordinate the meeting between Putin and also President Trump, and it sounds like there might be some work going on to make that happen again so the two men can just talk face-to-face instead of all the proxies and the media doing what they do and potentially mucking some things up. I do want to say quickly, too, you know, I've been talking about what's happening here in Washington State. This push against the right to bear arms, not just by the media, but by organized leftist organizations who want to strip us of that because they know that the right to bear arms is in place to prevent the rise of tyranny. That it's not to go hunting. It's not just for protection in your home, but it's to prevent the rise of tyranny and to be the final check and balance in the system. The well-armed people. And it's interesting how the right to bear arms and exercising that right, owning a firearm, going out and being trained, and shooting regularly, really brings freedom to the soul. In the Polish government and their change toward turning every person, 18 to 45, I think, as an able-bodied citizen to their militia and going back to what the United States used to do, where everybody would be bearing arms. And you're seeing a rebirth of freedom in Poland right now. And a lot of these huge marches are made up of these people in this modern movement. And so the right to bear arms is so much more than the mainstream media tries to make it out to be. And you know, I had a quote a long while back. I think it's probably good to revisit this. Because I think it just encapsulates where we're at and why things headed in the direction they're headed is not good. and is antithetical to freedom and liberty. And here's the quote. When you are guilty until proven innocent, it forces people into a corner from which they have no choice but to fight. When you are guilty until proven innocent, it forces people into a corner from which they have no choice but to fight. Whether we're talking bureaucracies or we're talking this attempt to strip law-abiding Americans of the right to bear arms. And ultimately, our strength in America is how often we exercise our rights, our freedom of speech, our right to bear arms, our property rights, our conscience rights. How often we exercise those and what we're willing to do to defend them. And when I see what's happening in the media right now, I believe it just allows us to redouble our efforts, motivates us to redouble our efforts so that we defend freedom for the next generation. And folks, if we don't stand up now, we may not have the ability later. They really do want Trump out of there. And they're willing to do some pretty extraordinary things to try to get him out of there. And there are people in this country who don't want to bring us together. They want to divide. And they want to use any excuse to do that. And so you'll hear fear-mongering about theocracies and fear-mongering about, you know, the right-wing hatred and all this. It's really simple. We just get back to loving America, loving the Constitution, and being Christians. May God bless all of you. May He make this generation the greatest one.